Max Kellerman Show is presented by Progressive Insurance. Be a part of Max Kellerman Nation on the Dr. Pepper call-in line, 888-SAY-ESPN. ESPN Nation is presented by Dr. Pepper. It's official. College football's back, and so is your favorite Dr. Pepper-loving college football town, Fansville. Just driving through Fansville about a week or two ago with the kids. Stopped at some fast food. Had a little bit of their Dr. Pepper. Oh, it's so good, Raj. Head to a store near you to treat your inner college football fan to an ice-cold 20-ounce Dr. Pepper today. Of course, I need to have the diet stuff at my age. That's the way it is. There is so much stuff going on before I even get to straight talk. First of all, we're coming off a great NFL weekend. All kinds of, like, exciting and weird and controversial stuff. Controversial, maybe not, but stuff to talk about. Great fight on Saturday night. Lomachenko-Lopez. Lopez Lomachenko, if you want to put the winner's name first. And then we got doubleheader on Monday Night Football. Like, Dallas and Arizona is interesting enough because Andy Dalton starting instead of Dak. And what about Kyler Murray in the offense? Can they really get that back rolling again against that Dallas secondary is nothing to write home about. But then the Chiefs and the Bills, both coming off losses, both really needing to rebound. But it starts at 5 o'clock Eastern. Oh, man, this is nothing better. There's nothing better. You turn on the TV while the kids are still doing their homework, and you got the rest of the night. But first, it's time for Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. Everyone wants to talk about Tom Brady beating Aaron Rodgers. Boy, Tom Brady certainly had a game. He had the kind of game that Bill Parcells would be proud of Phil Simms having in 1984. 170 yards, 2 touchdowns, and no interceptions. I mean, if you are looking for someone to ride a defense and running game to a win, boy, Tom Brady's your guy. And that's not even an insult. It's good. Like, a quarterback like that has value. And I'll tell you something else about Brady. Let me give him credit. After that debacle last week, where his offensive line cannot stay. Like they couldn't do anything clean. It was penalty after penalty after penalty. And it was killing drives. And Tom Brady's chewing them out demonstratively on the sideline. And then late in the game, after Nick Foles makes a play to put him in field goal range, and then Nagy mismanages the clock. Oh, Tom Brady, he has over a minute to win the game. Misses on third, misses on fourth, and thought it was still third down, right? He puts up the four fingers. Now it's fourth down. Tom. But I'll say this about a Tom Brady quarterback team. You knew they weren't going to make a lot of mistakes last night. You knew yesterday was not going to be a mistake-filled game. And that's credit to Tom Brady and leadership, not just to Arians, to Tom Brady. And they played a mistake-proof game. And you listen, if you have a great defense and a great defensive coordinator and a running game, because look, if you're getting almost 5 yards a carry and 113 yards, that's a good day for any back. You know, you can win, especially if uncharacteristically Aaron Rodgers was bad. If it's like, did Brady win it or Rodgers lose it? The Tampa Bay defense won it, meaning Rodgers lost it. It's the last time you remember him throwing two essentially consecutive pick sixes, more or less. That's a bad day for Rodgers. The pressure came. He didn't know how to deal with it. That was atypical. I wonder how much of the pressure of facing Tom Brady has to do with Rodgers screwing up. I know, like, NFL guys and the quarterback especially can scoff at that, right? Oh, come on, ridiculous. Come on. I don't care how much you're concentrating on the game. You think these guys aren't aware of the historical significance of a matchup? And Rodgers is the dude chasing Brady. Yeah, I believe that could get to him a little bit. But especially the defense got to him. And credit Todd Bowles, because Rodgers early in that game looked sharp. It's like, oh, here it comes. Who's the MVP, Rodgers or Russell Wilson? Now Rodgers is even better than Wilson. That's what you're thinking when it's 10-0. And then he throws those interceptions and the Bucs get rolling and they never look back. 38-10, that's a whooping. Beat the brakes off Green Bay. And here's the thing about Tampa Bay. The thing about Tampa Bay is Seattle has offensive weapons and an MVP at quarterback and a coach. And they have a defense that stiffens up in the red zone. I get it. But it's not just they give up a lot of yards. They give up a lot of points, Seattle does. And Green Bay has a guy who until yesterday I thought was even having an even better season than Russell Wilson. And he's a higher ceiling guy to me than Aaron Rodgers. And while he doesn't have the weapons Russell Wilson has, he has weapons. Like Devontae Adams just getting back, but Devontae Adams is a really good weapon. And their running game is, they got it going. But they also don't have, they have a better defense than Seattle, but it's not really a good defense. You look at Tampa Bay, they were not 7-9 last year with Jameis Winston giving the other team 112 points off 30 interceptions. You knew if you just replaced him with a steady Eddie type of quarterback, you'd reverse two of those losses. Call it 9-7. But you replaced him with Tom Brady. Is he better than just the kind of steady Eddie quarterback? Yeah, probably. I thought the over-under for wins for the Bucs was 9.5. I think I was right to say that. Are they going to win 9 or 10 games? But they're 4-2 right now. And they are live in the NFC because of that defense. Tom Brady doesn't have to be Aaron Rodgers or Russell Wilson. He just has to be a good game manager who can make a couple of good throws you need throughout the game, which is what he is. That's a good thing to be. He's like a poor man's Ryan Tannehill, Raj. That's the compliment. Here's Aaron Rodgers after the game.
Yeah, I mean, I feel good about the team, Bill. Might need to add an extra finger to the scotch, but I do feel good about the team. You know, I've played for so long. You know, you're going to have a couple stinkers.
Who's the extra finger to the scotch? I have a suggestion. You're going to be hearing a lot of this in the media, and there's a reason for that. Odell Beckham Jr. You got to get him away from Baker Mayfield. This dude is in his prime. You know how you hear, like, this guy's not just an excellent whatever, quarterback, running back, wideout. He's a great football player. Like, for example, Rob Gronkowski's a great football player. Not, you know, like, he can block, he can catch, he can do whatever you need him to do. Odell Beckham's a great football player. He does every single thing you want a guy to do. And he does it at a very high level. By the way, besides being able to throw a spiral with his offhand 50 yards, right? Like, you don't need him to do that, but he can do it. Besides hitting home runs out of, like, Yankee Stadium, if you need it, like, in batting practice, he could do that too, right? Besides being able to kick field goals if you really need him to, he could do that too. He's just an insane athlete. But he's in his prime, and he's matured. If you've talked to Odell through the years, and I have, the guy, he was always a guy who wore his heart on his sleeve. He was a very passionate kind of player. And people misunderstood that at first. But if you talk to his teammates, by and large, they really like him, and they liked him on the Giants. And, like, even 4 targets yesterday, Odell would be all right with 4 targets if they're winning. If you're targeting him 4 times because he's bracketed all the time and you got a lot of other ballers on the team and you're moving the chains, Odell gets that, especially nowadays. He always did, but especially nowadays. Like, talking to him several years ago, you heard a good kid who wanted to be great and was very, as I said, like, wore his heart on his sleeve. Now, you hear a dude who's been around for a while. You hear more of a veteran talking when you talk to him. They're wasting his prime. Gettleman sent him to Cleveland. It felt like punishment, right? They gave him the big contract in New York. We're never going to trade him. Then you trade him, eat $20 million in dead cap money, and you trade him to Cleveland. But you're like, oh, okay, but Baker can ball. No, he can't. Baker's not a baller. He's not a baller. He's not the worst guy in the world. He's all right. And by the way, I'm sitting here saying 2.5 years, first overall pick has had 4 different head coaches. You got to cut him some slack. It's going to make him look worse than he really is. Here's a comp, Alex Smith, first overall pick. New head coach after new head coach after new offensive coordinator, so he looked like a bust. But when he had some stability, what you saw from Alex Smith is, nah, he's a good quarterback. Only thing Alex Smith didn't really have is a strong arm. I think Baker's arm strength is better than Alex Smith's, right? But he's not really as good an overall quarterback as Alex Smith was. And furthermore, here's the thing. Not to take a shot at Alex Smith, you want more than Alex Smith. if you draft number one overall and you hit, you took Alex Smith, it's not that it's a bust, but you didn't do a good enough job. Forget about the fact that Aaron Rodgers was taken 23rd or whatever. Not a good enough job. And that's the thing about Baker Mayfield. He's a not as good version of Alex Smith. Even if, like, you take away the coaching and let's say he has stability to coaching, I think it'd be a solid quarterback. Is that enough? When you draft first overall, you're looking for a baller. That's not who this guy is. He's a guy. He's just a guy, a jag. Odell, free Odell. When Aaron Rodgers says that maybe the what did he say? The, we need another finger to the scotch. That Odell Beckham Jr. You put him on Green Bay, even with Green Bay's defensive problems. Oh my God, that was Straight Talk Wireless. Everything for less, only at Walmart. I didn't even get into the Pittsburgh defense. That deserves some credit too. Marcus Spears on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Roger, you sure this is Marcus and not Mark Spears? Yep. Your debacle from last week.
You never know. You just got to wait and see. Surprises, Marcus, on the Kellerman Show.
What's up, my brother?
Oh, you got the right Spears. You got the right Mark Spears. It's Marcus Spears. What's going on, Marcus? Marcus, so here's the thing about, let's start with Baker Mayfield. I'm saying, and you hear a lot of it in the media, like trade Odell Beckham Jr. This dude deserves better than this. Baker Mayfield's not the worst player in the world. He's kind of a starting-ish caliber quarterback. But he ain't it. He ain't it in Cleveland, Marcus. What are your thoughts about Baker Mayfield?
Oh, finally, y'all see he ain't it.
Yep. That's okay. Right.
Max, how long have I been telling you this, man?
A while.
Seriously. I started last year saying this, man. It is not, and I felt like it was just low-hanging fruit to continue to beat Baker up and to allow the guy to have his shine and glory based on what Cleveland was doing. The city deserved to have those wins that they had, and they're going to get a few more. And it was just a good time. But Kevin Stefanski clearly took the ball out of Baker Mayfield's hands, man. Like, if anybody watching football thought that Baker Mayfield were the reason that the Cleveland Browns were winning, that's because they wanted some way to justify their thoughts about Baker being an elite quarterback. Look, Max, the bottom line is this, bro. He's an average to below average quarterback. Mm. That's just who he is. Like, I wish he wasn't, because he was taken first overall, and he'll be highly scrutinized, and there'll be things that come along with that honestly – shouldn't even be his fault, because I'm still a little perplexed on how evaluators missed out on the fact that Baker Mayfield was just an average guy.
I thought he was going to be really good, because if you play Lincoln Riley Big 12 offense, you know, your stats are inflated.
No, man, y'all got caught up on this walk-on chip on your shoulder.
Yeah.
He did this at Oklahoma. Who don't do that at Oklahoma, bro? Who hadn't been a prolific passer at Oklahoma? These dudes sent Jalen Hurts, who Alabama said couldn't even start, to the Heisman Trophy ceremony.
All right. No. I have a lot of stuff. Listen, I got a lot of stuff to talk to you about. Let's move on. Yeah. Baker's no good. I mean, like, he's not the worst either, but
he's just a guy.
Free Odell Beckham Jr. Send him to Green Bay. Let's see something interesting. Marcus, I want to get on to some other stuff, and this is like a pet issue of mine, the New York Giants, and I'm going to talk about it later in the show, but Joe Judge and Jason Garrett punt from the Washington 38 up 13-10 against the winless Washington team, and there's something called a surrender index, and It was according to the surrender index, that was one of the most cowardly moves by a coach offensive coordinator. 96th percentile most cowardly in over a decade. So this is what I want to ask you, because this is a pet issue of mine. A lot of coaches in the NFL, you hear a lot of talk about personal responsibility and accountability and courage and all this. Most of these dudes are cowards when it comes down to their play calling and their decision making. They act as though they're so afraid of the negative outcome that they're afraid to take a chance because of criticism afterward. When you think about it's 4th and 2 on the opponent's 38 and you're up a field goal and the opponent is winless and you punt what you're saying is not only do you not trust your offense to pick up 2 yards on the down, but you don't trust your defense to give them a slightly shorter field, right? Like, what is your, like, why are so many coaches in the NFL, why do they talk the talk, but when it comes time to walking the walk they ask their players to do, they cop out with choices like this?
Because, Max, listen, yesterday I got excoriated for saying that Romeo Crennel made the right decision, right? Mm-hmm. And the bottom line is this, man. When you have the opportunity to win a game, win it.
Right.
Like, don't be the guy that's trying to think in the context of, you know, we gonna hope or wish that this thing go our way, regardless of what we know about ourselves.
But right? But the Crennel decision, something different, isn't it, Marcus? Like, I didn't really understand that thinking.
No. What I'm saying is you talking about the psyche of the Giants.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to explain why Romeo Crennel went for a 9-point lead as opposed to an 8-point lead.
To put him away.
There's some coaching in that as well. But there's also this mindset like, yeah, I've watched this offense go down the field on my team all game long. Let me try to win the game because more than likely we're going to give up a touchdown. Look at the time left on the clock.
Right. In other words, he's not scared to try to win. He's willing to risk losing to try to win.
Period.
Yeah, I like that too. Yeah.
Like,
I disagreed with that decision. Let me just be clear. I disagree with the decision because they would have had to score a touchdown and convert 2 just to send it into overtime. So to me, okay. There is where you just go, you know, you just kick the extra point. But I do like your point. I don't like to criticize coaches for having the guts to try to win and not coaching scared like Joe Judge did yesterday.
I'm not doing that. So when you bring up Joe Judge and what they decide to do, you know, we always there's this idea that I'm sending a message to my team, mm-hmm. but it really is that, because what it boils down to is, like Romeo Crennel and his decision, I'm trusting you to execute, mm-hmm. and I know that if we have success on this will not only build our relationship as far as players coach, but it also makes you more confident in doing your job, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like yesterday with the call that Ron Rivera made in the game, right? We can go to that one. We're talking about the game, like Kyle Allen. Run the football in. Execute the play. Or you play this play like it's the last play of the season and you need this to win the Super Bowl.
Marcus, because we're running out of time, and I want to get to one more kind of pet point of mine and bounce it off you. I tried to school Dan Orlovsky today about why Carson Wentz, he's not the reason they're losing, but brother, he's got to be the reason they win. He's not a second-year quarterback on a rookie deal. They traded up in the draft to get him. He's in his fifth season. He has $100-plus million guaranteed. Because of that, their resources are limited, what they can put around him. They're relying on him to elevate the team. Down 17-0 going into the half. He's, what is it? The rush comes. No, it was an unblocked. Yeah, it was an unblocked pass rusher in the A-gap. He leaves his feet.
Yeah, you're talking about when he jumps.
Yes, he leaves his feet to throw a pass and really throws what should have been an interception. So, like, it's just situational football. He should have lost the game right there. And then, and he, of course, he makes one beautiful play a game. He has a lot of ability. Of course, he's very tough. But there were a couple things. One, Dan's talking about the drops. He had Miles Sanders open. The ball comes late, throws it to the wrong shoulder. And so Miles Sanders almost makes a play on the ball, but doesn't. That's a drop. Okay. Yeah. Right? Like, okay, I think Wentz has to be better than this. And the tip-off to me, Marcus, they split Wentz out wide, and they had him blocking on the play. If that's your franchise quarterback you really plan on keeping around and he's injury-prone, why do you split him out wide and have him blocking instead of catching a ball? Like, what is that about?
Yo, it's validity to both sides. What I will say is this. you know, what your points are the points I've been, dude, listen, you know, again, Philly people kill me because I say Carson Wentz reminds me of Jameis Winston. It is, and it's not that Carson Wentz is not better than Jameis Winston. It's the fact that Carson Wentz will make great plays, and then he'll make plays that make you say, oh, no, it's no way he can be our guy.
Yep.
It's no way he can be our guy. So that's the point you're getting at, right? And, like, I've also come around a bit on Carson Wentz from this standpoint. He playing with two left feet, bro. Like, they have been riddled with injuries. They have been, like, there's a point where you just get decimated, and it doesn't matter who your QB is. It doesn't matter who your coach is. It's just not over. You can't overcome it.
Marcus, I don't think he's bad. I don't think he's bad. I just don't think he's earning his contract. Like, he's got all the ability in the world. He's tough as nails. He's just makes too many bad decisions, and his mechanics have regressed. Like, that's what it is. Man, he's not a top 10 quarterback.
You're not wrong, because when you pay guys $100 million plus, you expect them to overcome the things we're talking about. That's why you give them $100 million. I 100% agree with you from that standpoint.
Let's leave it right there.
Let's leave
it there. You agree with me. That's the main thing, Marcus. That's the main thing. So we can cut that clip, Raj, and play it for Dan Orlovsky when he comes on the show, just to antagonize him and frame Marcus out of context. The great Marcus Spears, ladies and gentlemen. Hate to cut Marcus off, but Raj is insisting we pay some bills. Max Kellerman Show is presented by Progressive Insurance. Cars, homes, boats, motorcycles, RVs, and more at progressive.com. Coming up, Teofimo Lopez won by a large margin, according to the official judges. Did they get it right? So Teofimo Lopez, who's been on my boxing show, Max on Boxing, more than anyone else, he might have been on there a half a dozen times already in like a year that the show's been on the air, whatever it's been. Was like a 4-5-1 underdog against Vasily Lomachenko. And I understood the odds. Lopez, a real puncher, good boxer, smart, fast, twitchy fighter with boxing skills. But he'd never been tested as a pro, really. Nakatani, a Japanese fighter who he was supposed to easily beat, went 10 rounds with him. In a performance that was impressive in the sense that Teo stuck with it, but not impressive in the sense that he was extended by a guy he was supposed to beat easily. And Richard Comey, who had won a belt, was supposed to give Teo a test in Teo's next fight, and Teo obliterated him. But Vasily Lomachenko had 400 amateur fights, 396 amateur fights, one loss. One loss out of almost 400 fights. And the one guy he lost to was one of those professional amateurs that the Eastern Europeans send out there sometimes. And Lomachenko beat him twice. He avenged the loss twice. That's the only dude to beat him in almost 400 amateur fights. And money had two gold medals out of the Olympics. One of the greatest amateurs who ever lived, and is a pro. He has one loss before Teo, because in his second pro fight, he was trying to break the record of quickest to a title. Second pro fight, he fights for a title against Orlando Salido. Salido came in so far over the weight, he had to give up his belt on the scale. Lomachenko still wanted to fight him. Okay, let's fight. Lomachenko had never been past six rounds, so he's like, let me pace myself. Salido not only was a very experienced and excellent fighter, he also hit Lomachenko low probably 100 times, like on the hips and stuff. And Lomachenko, not being a seasoned pro, never hit Salido back low. He just started complaining to the ref. I'm watching that going like, why are you, you know, in the pro game, you don't complain to the ref, you hit him back low. Anyway, with all of that and him never going past six, Lomachenko pacing himself, all that, he almost knocked Salido out in the 12th round. Salido was holding on. That was his only loss in his second pro fight. Right? So 396 amateur fights, two gold medals, one loss he avenges twice. And in the pros, in his second pro fight, fighting for a title already, outweighed by 10 pounds, where the guy has to give up the belt on the scales and hits Lomachenko low 100 times, and Lomachenko almost knocks him out in the 12th. That's his other loss. I mean, Lomachenko's not playing. Rampaging through divisions, obliterating everyone, one top fighter after another quitting on their stools. Nicholas the Axeman Walters quits. Guillermo Rigondeaux, another two-time Olympic gold medalist, quits. Now he's facing young Teofimo Lopez, who's never been really tested, never really fought a top fighter, like a pound-for-pound type fighter. But, you know, Lopez has power. Maybe he can catch Lomachenko. They come out in round one. Ding, ding, round one. Teo starts right away. He's outboxing Lomachenko. He's keeping him on the end of a jab. He's hitting him with body shots. And the threat of Teo's power is keeping Lomachenko from mounting any offense. Second round comes. First round was Lopez, clearly. Second round comes, and Lomachenko lands a good straight left hand that maybe carried the round. The second round could have gone either way, but you could score it for Lomachenko. Then rounds 3, 4, 5, and 6, all Teofimo Lopez, right? Like, the way you thought the fight would play out, going in, I thought, okay, it's going to be about even through 6, because I know Teo can box. Lomachenko's going to figure him out about even through 6. Maybe even Teo will be up 4 rounds to 2 after 6, I thought. And then Lomachenko pours it on. And at the end of the fight, the question is, does Teo, you know, is he going to make it till the end of the fight? And he'll have enough heart, he'll probably make it, but that'll be the question. And Lomachenko wins. That's not what happened. But it resembled that kind of fight, only Teo was even better than he ought to have been. So in rounds 3, 4, 5, and 6, Lomachenko tries to step around Teo. He's a southpaw, meaning he leads with his right hand. So in boxing, you want to establish if a southpaw fighter fights a right-handed fighter called an orthodox fighter, then whoever has their foot, their lead foot on the outside has position. And it's a lot to get into. I don't need to break it all down now. But take my word for it. It has to do with which way the fighter is moving. If you think about just put yourself in a southpaw stance and throw a jab, your natural motion takes you counterclockwise as a southpaw. So if you can make a southpaw move clockwise, they have to constantly reset their feet before they punch. They're not punching in the flow. They're really retreating. If you see an orthodox fighter fighting a southpaw fighter and they're going counterclockwise, that guy's retreating. If the southpaw fighter's going clockwise, he's really retreating. That's strategically. Tactically, you want to, you know, there are other reasons that you want to keep your lead foot on the outside. But whenever Lomachenko would try it, Teo wouldn't let him. Teo's feet were quick too, and he would turn with Lomachenko. Anyway, so through 6 rounds, it's either 6-0 Lopez or 5-1 Lopez. Then 7 is close. Could have gone either way. Maybe you give it to Lomachenko. Through 7 rounds, he starts to pour it on. He's headbutting Teo. He's roughing him up. Through 7 rounds, it's either 7-0 Lopez or it's 5-2 Lopez. Anywhere from there, you could have it 5-2, 6-1, or 7-0 Lopez through 7. 8, 9, 10, and 11, all Lomachenko. And he's starting to rough Teo up. So it's the fight you anticipate going in, but more toward Lopez than anticipated. And the question is Lomachenko have enough to pour it on and come on and win? Enter the 12th round, you're thinking the fight could hang in the balance. Teofimo Lopez's father tells him, box, you know, you got this fight won. That's not Teofimo Lopez. He comes out and puts it on Lomachenko. Puts it on him, keeps him on the end of the jab, hurting him with body shots, throwing the right hand upstairs, wins the 12th round big. So at the end of 12, if you gave Lomachenko, there were 6 rounds definitely for Teo, 4 for Lomachenko, and 2 that could have gone either way. You could have it 6-6, 7-5, or 8-4. You cannot have Lomachenko winning. And as it turns out, all 3 judges gave it to Teo, probably by too wide a margin. Especially Julie Letterman, who's a good judge, but she had a bad night. 119-111 Teo. Seemed out of line. But the main thing is the right guy won the fight. And what a night for him. Look, Teo's naturally bigger than Lomachenko, right? He's really a junior welterweight fighting at lightweight. And Lomachenko's really a featherweight junior lightweight fighting at lightweight. So he's moving really up naturally past where he's best. And Teo's artificially kept down, you know, below where he really should be fighting. And the old adage is a good big man beats a good little man. Here's the problem. A good big man doesn't beat a great little man. And Lomachenko's a great little man. Teofimo Lopez is not just good. He is better than that. And how great he becomes is now up to him and the rest of his career. But so far, that is a chapter in a Hall of Fame career. A win like that is a chapter in the Hall of Fame career of a great fighter. What a performance by Teofimo Lopez. By the way, great kid, bilingual, 23 years old, undefeated, a real puncher, an excellent boxer, and a win over Lomachenko. The king is dead. All hail the king. Teofimo Lopez establishes himself as one of the best pound-for-pound fighters in boxing and one of the biggest stars in boxing, and it really couldn't happen to a nicer kid. Max Kellerman Show is brought to you by Shell. Pennzoil synthetic motor oils are made from natural gas. It gives you an unbeatable, not an unbeatable engine protection, Raj. That would be ridiculous. Just unbeatable engine protection. The proof is in the Pennzoil. Based on sequence 4A wear test using SAE5W30. You know what else is great about Lopez and Lomachenko? ESPN. No pay-per-view. You just turn on ESPN and there it is. And guess what else, Raj? Terrence Crawford is fighting Kell Brook next month on ESPN. Did an NFL team already quit their coach? No Doubt is brought to you by My Computer Career, training for a better life. Gonna get right down to it.
We got you covered.
Let me tell you what I think it means.
No Doubt.
Okay, go ahead, Max, Rod. What do you got for me?
Boy, we was partying in L.A. last night for the Dodgers. However, despite making the World
Series, quite a comeback, down 3-1.
I know, 85% chance they were going to lose, and they were down 3-1 or lose the series. But despite making the World Series for three out of the last four seasons, the season isn't a success for the Dodgers just yet.
Correct. Not for the Dodgers. Yeah. The Dodgers have been playing, No Doubt. Not for the Dodgers. The Dodgers have been playing money ball with money for longer than anyone else, right? Like, they have an analytics-driven team. Once they poached the Tampa Bay GM, one of the reasons they're playing Tampa Bay is because the kind of DNA is still, what's his name, the GM of the Dodgers. Come on, why now I'm forgetting his name. Come on, yeah, I was only in LA for 6 years. Anyway, the point is, he was in charge in Tampa Bay and then kind of left his imprint there. They figured out how to do it and kind of left the machinery in place, so they're really good. Took it to the Dodgers, and the Dodgers are now a powerhouse. But the fact is, they're among World Series favorites every year, and they still don't have a title. It's a failure for them if they don't win a chip.
True, and Andrew Friedman is who you're speaking of.
Andrew Friedman. Andrew Friedman, yes. Of course, yes.
Hey, while you can, take a listen to Jets head coach Adam Gase.
This locker room, these guys are good guys that work extremely hard. You know, it's frustrating. I mean, when you talk to them on Monday, you can tell. I mean, these guys, they're hurting. They try to do the right thing. They come in, they work. They do a great job of having high energy at practice, trying to get better. You know, I feel like the players are really the ones trying to find a way to flip this thing. I mean, they're taking the lead on this, and we just got to keep grinding and keep trying to find ways to fix those, especially early mistakes, to help flip the game.
The Jets have quit on Adam Gase.
How would you be able to tell? I could say, nah, son. How could you be able to tell whether they quit or not? Look, the fact of the matter, Adam Gase is up there going, I don't know. I mean, the players play really hard. We have some good players, and they play hard. I guess it's if we could get them, they need a better coaching. Adam Gase is practically saying, I don't know what it is. I guess they need a better coach. I don't know. Have you heard about any good head coaches? Maybe they could do something with this group. You wouldn't be able to tell if the Jets quit or not. They're awful. The whole franchise stinks. It's an awful organization. And it's like the death sentence of a career to get to wind up with the Jets. I don't wish it on my enemy to wind up with the Jets or to be a Jets fan, as a matter of fact. Clown franchise. Yes.
Keyshawn, who will be joining us next hour, has some interesting thoughts on the Jets and the quarterback and what they should do. Maybe ask them. Mm-hmm. But hey, this next one, after bouncing back last night versus the Rams, Jimmy G's job is safe.
Oof. No doubt for this season. I mean, I'll say that Jimmy G, I think Jimmy G is good. He doesn't have a lot of arm strength either, but notice he almost never loses. I wonder why that is, right? Like, wherever he goes, he wins a lot. Where's he been? He was with the Patriots holding the clipboard for Tom Brady, and Bill Belichick wanted to make him the heir apparent. And when he gets, and then, you know, Shanahan wants him, and when he gets him, they almost never lose, and they go to the Super Bowl. They have a 10-point lead. I don't know. He makes quick reads, gets rid of the ball quickly. Just he doesn't have a great deep ball, but okay. What else? What else you got?
I lost my spot. Oh, here we go. After throwing three more picks, Kirk Cousins leads the NFL with 10 interceptions. Ooh, 10 interceptions already. Vikings need to bench Kirk Cousins, in quotation, backup is Sean Mannion. Vikings need to bench Kirk.
Nah, son. I would get him another coach. I mean, Stefanski obviously had a lot to do with his success. Look at the success Baker Mayfield has now. If you have a kind of average-ish starting quarterback that you want to pretend is a franchise quarterback, hire Kevin Stefanski. Right? But, you know, without Kevin Stefanski, Kirk Cousins is what he is. He's all right. He's a professional quarterback. He's a low-end starter. He ain't a franchise guy you want to build around or anything. And that's what he's always been, really. Keyshawn, try to tell us about Baker. He's coming up next. Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio.